welcome to the Mug Meetings Summaries Podcast. I'm Gilbert de Tillieu. Our May meeting started with the usual roundtable discussion, moderated by Michael Doob. Topics covered included Ubuntu 11, power supplies and wall warts, voice over IP versus Skype, network probes and security hacks, and low-power boards and boxes for turnkey router or firewall applications.
Ubuntu 11, to like it or hate it?
Yes.
I remember they used it for something like that. Now I got the newest version, and it's like, what's the difference? It's not quite what you expect.
But I think they're still using X Windows, right? But with a different
impact. Yeah, I heard that it doesn't have Wayland in it at all, the supposed exploit.
Yeah, last I heard, they're still testing.
11.04 is the single worst version I've ever seen. It's the first time I've ever had to do something I never thought I'd do in Linux, which is reinstall version 10.10 and get rid of 11.04. Because what happened when I upgraded it, it removed the entirety of GNOME and replaced it with the new desktop theory thing, Unity. It ruined settings, it ruined things, it installed fonts, which you'll never use because you can't read them.
And what happened when you switched it to GNOME? It's still there.
It's still there. So I had to wipe out the entire thing and restart with 10.10.
But why couldn't you use GNOME in 11.4? It is there.
No, when I did the upgrade path from 10.10 to 11.4, it removed GNOME. It installed Unity without asking.
Yeah, it should have both of them there. Though.
Yeah, it does.
No, but it removed it completely. It was not in my machine.
Well,
I did the first night. Apparently, they since corrected it because enough people were complaining about the fact that, you know, you're using GNOME and then you've lost it and then you're getting these strange... As a matter of fact, the list for about a week had weird font, strange font, unreadable font, all in the Ubuntu listing. So I guess they switched it now, I guess, if you've done it since then, and it's keeping GNOME in there.
Well, on a brighter note, the Kubuntu 11.04, the KDE version, seems to work fine. I've got it installed in a virtual machine. I've had no problems with it. I've had more problems with the virtual machine than I have with the operating system.
I think about the Raspberry Pi, the new little machine with the ARM processor. Got me wondering about power supply, because it looks like any power supply for that's going to be way larger than the computer itself. And I wondered if anybody knew of any solution to the proliferation of wall warts and various other boxes that are now moving outboard of the main computer and hanging around with all these cords about. Is there like a universal box, various voltages that you plug into and kind of run a few devices off of? It's just it's getting nuts.
They sell them usually at Staples, or it's called a multi-voltage.
But I mean, is it... You know, if you got like an access point and a few things laying around, pretty soon you've got five or six DC cords laying around on your desk with all this crap plugged into it. Can you plug in multiple devices, or is it just different voltages?
No, the one at Staples is different voltages. There is one at Tiger Direct, though, that's called the Energy Box. It's about so big by so big. In back is different ports for different... things. What you've got to do is you got to plug in the wire, and at the other end, you plug in the right end in the right direction.
Just make sure you get the polarity right.
Well, no, what you've got to do is you've got to take a computer and you've got to program it for that port for how many amps and how many volts.
Yeah, my solution to that is pretty much I've got a box full of those old fancy Eniums where there's like a Mol X in and Mol X out. Snip off the end, snip off, you know, the wall wart, wire it in, take some Molex screws. I run about three or four things off one power supply, just run it off the ISO line.
So you just gotta check current needs, size, wording, and wire one up as well?
Most of it is either 5 volts, 12 volts, or about 7.5. And if you run from 12 to 5, certain power supplies will allow you to get that happy in the power system.
You don't have grounding issues?
Not yet.
I've done the same thing for a home control system, and it works. It's
The only thing I have is every couple of years is vacuum it all the dust. And, you know, if you need anything other than, you know, plus minus ground, tall or five, small, and there's cheese stuff.
Yeah, tall or five is the plant.
There was one that I saw, a high-end power supply that basically, as well as providing standard, you know, power to the motherboard, standard 24 pin. It also gave you, instead of giving you all the cables, like male ends, it just had all kinds of email. And that's what we were once going to just plug direct to that. It actually had like USB power. Like it just, if your device simply needs power over USB, it had a couple of USB.
Like a nice world of everything powered from USB. Just this power supply, enough brains to negotiate the power draw, and that's all we need. But we're not there yet. Phones are moving that way. A lot of the newer handsets are all they made the micro USB. But otherwise, you just need to buy lots of power bars. I think the guys in the power bar business are paying everybody off.
I don't mind the power bar thing. It's all those cords, and then if you bump the wrong board and you mess with another board, something goes down, and you know, what was that? It's like a banking equipment. Maybe I don't know.
You wipe your fingerprints off it.
When you put labels on stuff, that helps.
Well, I'll still knock them out of there. I mean, then I know then who I got to, you know, admit my guilty. Can't claim labels.
So how many people here are going to switch to portable SIP phones now that Microsoft bought Skype?
It's all the smartphones and Android lifestyle. Is
the Android voice VoIP app Skype based, or is it just a pure SIP plan?
Well, they got Google Voice too.
Well, yeah.
Well, that's right. Yeah, they were calling for free for the month.
Yeah. But let's face it, a penny a minute, you're right there. Yeah. Basically, you know, they used Android.
I have. I'm just wondering how many people are going to switch because of the announcements today. Well, Ballmer has been at it all day, almost every hour, announcing a new thing that he's going to do now that they own Skype. At 5 o'clock, he's claiming that the next project that Skype is going to be working on is eliminating anything to do with open source versions, which translates into eliminating all versions for Linux. So, actually, I think Ballmer is trying to trash Microsoft into the ground so it doesn't exist. Everything he's done recently everything he's ever done has been to try to come into the ground.
Well, he's got a mad on about Linux ever since he lost Germany to them, when he made the pitch himself in person and got sent home empty-handed. I think he's been a little pissed at Linux ever since.
The reason they did that was the German military didn't like the fact that Microsoft was trying to send data over the internet to Microsoft headquarters from inside German military
security network. Yeah. Well, whatever the reason was, when you know Ballmer himself goes there, he does not expect to return empty. Yeah, time will tell what will happen to Skype. I mean, because Oracle bought MySQL, but they haven't broken it yet. We'll wait and see. It yet happen. Microsoft may just sit back and collect the money.
There's people predicting that the microcomputer is going to disappear with all the tablets and your cell phones and your playbook just won't buy them anymore. You know? And Windows will just go down drain. They're not
going to. Windows is already collapsing into the gamer market. When you take a look at what their share of users, back in the day when they used to be like business and gamers, and now it's business and gamers. So that's their core business now. That's why they've moved into media stream and moved into content distribution.
So they might have PlayStation.
Look, whoever took down the PlayStation network did it so skillfully and so brilliantly, nobody still has a hot flipping clue who did it. Yeah. So if I was any of the other console networks right now, I wouldn't be sleeping.
Well,
I would be buying every firewall known to man and slapping it in the network.
Well, the problem was, it wasn't a firewall.
Yeah. They had unpatched, unupdated patch.
Mm-hmm. The Apache turned out to be from 2004 unupdated.
The ugly truth is, doesn't matter what you've got, if they really want to get in, they'll get in.
Well, true.
That's what keeps us all awake at night. That's why we try and become lesser targets.
Well.
Because if we're a lesser target, then we're not worth the effort to break in, because anybody can break into anything.
Well, on that, you might want to get the Backtrack 5 distribution, which is released tomorrow.
That's not going to get my return my credit card information from whoever's got it off the PS3 network, though.
That's true. But it can help you prevent hackers in your own network.
I thought they said a lot of those cars were, like, located, but they lost, like, the support.
Well, yeah, the problem is to what extent do you want to rely on the nation? Yeah. Their insurance companies are opened up shop in the building, I'm sure, watching this one, so...
I think you should ask Robert and his boss.
Let's put it this way. If everybody except somebody gets hacked, it's sure going to look bad.
Actually, probably 80% of the probes that I see these days are in MySQL or SQL.
Injection attacks. That's almost everything I've seen. Yeah. Occasionally, you'll get the front page had a few issues, and you'll get guys trying to run that little R exec from front page extensions. But I never, ever turned those on because front page is a pain in the sit down.
A few directory scan.
Yep.
Directory scan attacks, probes for PHP.
Yeah, directory traversal attacks you'll see occasionally. But Apache doesn't usually deal with them well, especially if you have translation set up. You have rewrite rules on the translation probes usually explode.
Well, I've been handling it by taking any attack of an IP address string to keep the entire subnet that I want. So I think I've got rid of both half a chunk. Half a germ.
Yeah. I didn't look at the whole subnet because it took too long to figure out what the subnet was. And most of the guys will try the same attack in the same IP address multiple times. So if you just waste basket the each first attack, you'll eventually get the whole subnet. But
no, there's a. I don't have the address. I don't have the site name, but there's a service in the States that has a really good site for exploring attacks. Not so much from the attack perspective, but the network that it comes from. You just type in the IP address, it's back with not just the individual subnet that it belongs to, but also, what do you call it? Is it Border Gateway Protocol? It gives you the entire upstream network path that the packets have traveled through.
Yeah.
So, and often what will happen is if somebody gets a subnet assigned, they'll have it in various, if you want to call it, cluster sizes, and so you can chew off how much you want to deny. Mm-hmm. And so the easiest thing that I found so far is by using that tool is just to take entire subnets out. And that way,
Do that real time?
Semi real time.
I would say since last fall, I've seen a significant increase in probes. And so every day,
he was going back to the log.
Well, it's a combination. First of all, just have a look at the log watch reports. And I look to see what ports have been probed and the frequency. And then I go through analog reports on websites. And then if I just get enough attention, it's coming from one particular region or area, then I'll do a little bit more investigation. And if there's any trouble, I'll just do the subnet. And if I've been overzealous, then I'll back it out later. But it's the fastest and easiest way, especially with a lot of foreign sites or foreign network areas that you have very little chance of needing access to in the future.
Yeah. Well, I would be faster for that basically is come to fail ban, right? So that would create more registration to try and so it just automatic bans that for a period of time. They go away. It's great because you have very, very little.
I'm starting to, like I said, since last fall, I've started to see a lot higher frequency of probes, a lot more sophisticated probes, and from new regions that you never used to see traffic from. So, the first defense is essentially, deny everything and let in one or two select.
They could always be coming from compromised machines in a subnet, right? So that means that...
That is why I will take out entire subnets. Because if somebody has hacked, let's say, a server farm, corporate network, or a hosting provider, if he's gotten access to one machine, then there's a pretty good chance he'll get access to the others. And they're all going to be in that same subnet. So take the whole subnet out in one shot. Because to do that is just as much work as individual IP address out. And then if you've been overzealous, it's easy to back it out. And it's been It's quick, it's easy, it's the least amount of work, and still be vigilant.
You just manage that? How do
you manage that? Yeah, it's run for 15 years, I guess. So it's been constantly tailored, and I split out block rings into a separate file that's loaded in. So it makes it really easy to, and that keeps it, all those blocked IP addresses away from the script. And I went to do country-based IP blocking, but it was to take out all of Russia and all of China and all of India with so much processing load that I backed off on the trunk. And so now I'll do it just by some range. So I probably have, I think, the subnets in China province. And so that's what happened in the province so far is deal with it. And like I said, if I've been overzealous, it's really easy to back.
Actually, how often do you find you've been overzealous?
I don't have access to Yahoo. I don't have access to videoland.org. Flickr, I don't have access to, but it's not really breaking hard. So, when I have some time, I'll go back and I'll open those back up. But it's very rare. Because like I said, the clientele that I want access to my website is, first of all, principally Manitoba, principally Canada. And so if I see any kind of probing comes from Bahrain, Russia, Germany, China, Korea, Japan, they're pretty much known. And it's only very rarely that I'll need access to a website from a company that's. And if I do, then I'll just use a proxy. I'll just use an iPad and firewall.
Is this basically your personal system you're running?
Well, I have a home-based business, so.
So you have a pretty good idea.
Why don't you have separate machines and sandbox them? And you,
I do.
I should ask you questions. What should I do if I'm being constantly? I've had the same problem you did, And what I've done in the most extreme case, a no-brainer is, reboot your operating system, reinstall everything from scratch. That's sort of drastic. Are there other approaches that are, not as extreme? Or, what I did was I started changing things around too much. Like, I had it fairly good with Linux, and then I thought, I'll go to Windows and see how things are going there, but I had worse problems with Windows. I had, virus problems. I got that Peter Norton utility stuff, and then it was good for a while, but actually someone probably saw that I had, Peter Norton on it and all that kind of stuff, so it made it a lot worse. So I called Windows Help Center sites and all that. I got these people from India, to help me reinstall my Windows operating system. Still had problems, so I put aside that machine. I bought myself an iMac. It was great for a while, but I've had other people in my family use all kinds of websites from Eastern Europe. So, now I'm thinking, should I put my old operating system, if I want to, reinstall my old operating system? I find I can't do that anymore because it's saying that it's been upgraded automatically so many times that the old disks are no longer, I can no longer put them on. And that, I thought, was interesting. Should I go to the Genius Bar at Polo Park or, I don't know.
Well,
it's always... I think everybody's experienced the same. It's always defense in depth, and there's no one single solution that's going to give you protection. It needs to be in layers and start off with a router firewall box as the first, and essentially deny everything and then open ports back up. That's one to use, and still use antivirus software on machines. And probably the easiest thing to do is if you have people who want to browse the internet, is have a disposable disk.
Or even just have a virtual machine?
Yeah.
Or have an operating a live operating system on a CD and run from that?
I just use disposable disks.
Yeah.
Well, create an image of Fedora or whatever, and if there's ever a problem, just completely get the image of it. And I don't care. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I said probably my son. I have no idea where he's going.
You probably
and I really don't care because the machine he's got access to you, this is disposable. Mm-hmm. And if he screws up, then he loses all of his levels for all of his and whatnot, so tears for him.
Is it basically a family that...
Yeah, basically, for myself, I have, workstation stuff. I'm thinking of, upgrading to AutoCAD, and I'd like to have that separately and not have that, wrecked.
Install a base operating system. get VMware or VM Home Edition, and once it's installed, set up what's called a terminal set, which is just basically setting up a dump terminal which basically boots an image every time. That's basic from scratch, so that when they go to these websites, they have their website, but it doesn't infect any of the machines, because that base image of the machine is tossed every time it's turned off. Okay. Although it keeps up, but there's a separate home folder. That's 90% of your problem right there. Keep a copy of any of your apps in separate VM, and that way you have no crossing there.
Many of your virtual managers allow you to snapshot your current image of your current situation, so you can just save that and then reload it in if you want to go back to where you were. Not all, but many of them allow that.
VirtualBox is good for that.
Okay, other topic? We've got another couple of minutes. We're getting close to the break, but no, happy bunch. Okay, good.
After now, I would speak of the second side of the note. After hearing him talk about success using IP tables for years and years, has anybody had good success or recommendation of an off-the-shelf router firewall box for solo there?
Pardon?
How much more on the show can you do? Take it home, plug it in, and maybe it's.
And the reason I ask is that I need to start turning machines off so that I don't have to run another 10,000 things in the air conditioner.
And just PFs. You can try the Astaro software screen.
Pardon?
Try the Astaro firewall software screen.
Well, I guess what I'm looking for is essentially a standalone box that allows
you to buy the appliance from Astaro. That's going to cost you money. It's pretty good. But if you go down to either one of those boxes, would run it fine for you. Get a solid state drive, throw it in there, got two NICs, put the software on. Three NICs if you want a DMZ. Just pull it out, just line it up and run it. And it'll probably run. That's pretty much out of the box. If you want their updates, it'll cost you a bit, but not much. I think it's $29.95 a year. You know, do all the push updates for it.
I use Untangle as my. I find it's really user friendly. It's all from the GUI, so it's separate modules for what you want to do. That just installs. I've got that right before.
Yep.
Well, if I have to go that far, I'll just get a micro ATX 4.
You can throw an extra NIC card.
10 or 20 watts of power, and that's. It's really. I'm just getting tired around 500 watts.
You could use an Atom board.
One way, yeah.
If you're looking for a small little board, SoCrest is a really good board that OpenBSD supports. It has 4 gigs on it, runs off of, like, I think, 20-watt system. It runs TIX-12, and it has space for a hard drive if you want it, like a 2.5.
Especially if you go buy one of those little 80 gig solid-state drives, there's no moving parts.
Yeah.
Keep the power draw down, because a lot of these small boxes, the stupid hard drive is 3/4 state hard drive.
Oh, yeah.
And you really only need it to boot, because the rest of the time, if you've got enough RAM, the hard drive should never be actually doing anything, unless you say it config or reload config.
Just a firewall, that's a USB signal, read on, and then hang and get it configured, and never change.
Same thing,
never
solid
change.
State drive.
The solid state drive boot a lot. $150 for an SSD, right?
Yeah, but they boot a lot faster.
I actually use that.
That's
true. If it's Linux, you don't boot it very well.
The only situation I get into is I have a 3-head network setup and just try and stuff some extra couple network ports in a small format.
Mm-hmm. I'm using exactly that kind of setup at home. With a mini ITX board and a solid state drive that goes from off to actually running and being able to do stuff in 27 seconds, running a standard Linux implementation. It's fanless. Actually, it's great.
How many watts is the power supply?
The one I have is actually 95, but you can run it off of 60. It runs fine off a 60-watt power supply.
If you want to go to the ultimate low power, you can still find one. Get one of those Linksys 4-port plus WAN routers that runs Linux.
There's no sale for about 50, 70 bucks.
Yeah, and that thing's 5 watts, so you don't need more than that for power. That's just a little box.
Runs off a wall work.
Yes, it does. It's a shop in Canada.
No, I'm talking about like on the internet.
Gadgets that are fairly custom, so I can get out of the heat and power generation business and get some more reliability too. I've got a bunch of cobbled together crap, you know, leftovers for these special purpose things. But eventually, it's like, well, I need a more permanent solution because it's like I'm never not going to have a firewall.
Because I mean, before I started downsizing boxes, you know, I had to run a 10,000 gig air conditioner.
What kind of processors are those, like Spock?
ARM something or other. There was a Linux load made for it. If you look around, there's a they TFTP, and you just trigger the TFTP, and you can load your own OS right over top.
There's also a couple ones out there with thin processors. That's actually a different architecture.
Is there a Linux load?
There is.
Yeah.
OpenWRT and DWRT are actually good firmware for that. DWRT is defining the whole WRT is got a good solid core. There's a lot of tons of applications.
That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. For more Mug Meetings summaries or for more information about the Manitoba Unix User Group, check out our website at muug.mb.ca.